They're just mentioning two people that probably in the last months are very dear to me, and they're both elderly. One was a man named Mac, who probably was my last funeral before I came to Holden, Mac McKinley. And he was, Mac was kind of one of these never give up people, but he died in kind of despair and discouragement. One of the last things he did in his life was, with crippling arthritis, he built a patio, and it took him like a whole day to get one board connected to another board to build his patio. When his arthritis finally overtook him to the point he couldn't do that, he was completely discouraged and depressed now for the rest of his life. In his last weeks, he couldn't even move. Every half hour they had to come and move him in his bed. And never until maybe the last day did Mac kind of give in. And whenever I talked to him about it, he said, he'd always say, if I can't work, I'm worthless. I'm not worth anything to anybody if I can't work. And the other person is Irene, who's still living and is in her 90s. Just before I left, she had a slight stroke, couldn't take care of herself anymore, got put in a rest home. And I went to see her the day that they were selling all her furniture out of her home. And you usually try to feel what people are feeling. So I said, Irene, I bet it's hard to be sitting here in this rest home, you know, and see that this is today when they're clearing your house out and selling your furniture. And she laughed. And then she tried to help me. Don't you understand that anything like furniture is just, you know, come one day and go another day? And I said, oh. Yeah, all right, that's right, she said. So now, I saw her like the day before I left for Holden in the rest home, and she was busy trying to cheer other people up, you know, in the rest home. But I think in essence what we're talking about through this whole introduction to theology is, you know, what did Irene grasp and what has she grasped in her life? Mac, until maybe his last day, he never discovered or never took for himself. That's really what we're about. And it's a critical question for all of us, because I have to ask myself, will I be Mac or will I be Irene? When so many of the things that are meaningful to me today are gone and lost and I can no longer do. That's really the question we're dealing with. Well, moving on from Mac and Irene, just a little review. Our model last time was a triangle, where we talked about the human being having what we called an ultimate reality. An ultimate reality out of which we ask life to validate us. Or as the book says, who says I'm okay? You know, whatever I put here is where I look for my okayness or my worth. And then we talked about how we live our life surrounding ourselves with the word about this reality. And that can either be like all the magazine articles, or as David mentioned so often, it's conversation. You know, if your kind of reality is you're into cars, wherever you go, you talk about cars. You know, and then out of that reality flows a life. And we mentioned at the end that in traditional Christian doctrine, you can almost fit this in, that if God is the ultimate reality, Jesus is the Word, and the Bible uses the Word, it's the Word of that ultimate reality upon which a lifestyle flows. And probably we are brought to that ultimate reality by the Word. And revelation then would mean that this reality comes to us from its source through the Word to us. That's Now, then we talked about Luther's definition of sin, which was a rather radical departure from what most theologians had said about sin, that he defines sin, the opposite of sin is not being good, but the opposite of sin is trust. Sin is trust, or by sin we mean non-trust, or you could say, or false trust. To Martin Luther, and some other reality was here besides the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob revealed in Jesus. There was another reality here than that, and that we placed our trust in that reality to provide to us the meaning of our existence. Then that is what is called sinfulness. You know, and you can fit what we often term sins into that. I was trying to kind of figure that out. For example, you know, what's an average typical sin? Stealing. You know, something doesn't belong to you, so you steal it. But it's, what then that is just an outgrowth of our life being centered around another reality. You know, for example, if that reality is materialism, then a stealing might flow out of that. Or if that reality is self-glory, you know, a lot of stealing isn't because you need it, but there's certain self-glorification. You know, but that the acts that we often call sin flow out of that misplaced trust. So that would be how the two relate. So one of the prominent Luther scholars, Philip Watson, he's a Methodist who's probably one of the most outstanding Luther scholars, which is interesting. His book on Martin Luther is simply called Let God Be God, which meant to Philip Watson, all of Martin Luther's teaching, if you would put them in one phrase, would simply be, let God be God. That would be. Okay, then we move from there into the next old model, which was kind of the wave and flow of our life, from some comfort and normality to cracks, to some ingenious and wondrous way the human being has to kind of patch up these cracks and move on in life. Life is a procession of cracks that get patched. You know, and we listed some of our cracks to each other, first cracks, major cracks. And I think if we put all of them together, it would just be wondrous to think how we can gather as a celebrated community when all of these things have happened to us. You know, isn't that wondrous? We could just say kind of a wow. Anyway, that happened to you and you're here celebrating. You know, and again, that's what we're talking about is all about. There's something awesome about the human being in terms of the way we live through cracks. And I found this quote from St. Augustine quoted in Psychology Today, relayed by Martin Marty, which fits into this. People travel to wander. I always say that word wrong. There's a wander and there's a wonder. Wonder, okay. People travel to wonder at the height of mountains, at the huge waves of the sea, at the long courses of rivers, at the vast compass of the ocean, at the circular motion of the stars, and they pass by themselves without wondering. But that said a lot. The wonder of the human being, and as we're going to see in this course, the greatest affirmation of the human being is that we're going to end up saying the ultimate reality, whom we call God, is just crazy in love with us. So we'll get to that. Well, now we'll move on to the crunch, from cracks to crunch. Are you ready? And what we're doing here is putting the crack, or the cracks that we live into, a larger perspective of what we would say our whole life is, and that's the crunch. And I had the second paper to hand out today, and I left it up in the room. So I did. All that was on the paper is what I'm going to put on the board. So it's nothing complicated. When I started using this little model, I only had one arrow coming in from each side, but I've changed it to three. The reason being, that's the New Mexico state flag. Just the Indian Zia sun symbol. You know, well, that's neither here nor there, but... okay, now, one thing we're going to do, and I mentioned this, is we're going to, at least for today, until the very end, we're going to put our traditional God concept again on the shelf. Because our purpose in dealing with theology here is first getting a grasp of what our human life is. And then we have to start asking the question, as Christians, do we have a story, and do we have a God story and a theology that's big enough to answer the question now that is raised by the situation of life? Okay. So what we have up here, here's the I that's living my existence in the world. And the scope of our existence now can be looked at in this model as a pressure, that we live in a pressure between what you might call four powers. And when we end up with this, I hope you'll all feel with me that life is a crunch. And I want everybody today to end up kind of discouraged. And kind of, I want you to walk out over the weekend and say, wow. And that's a little dangerous because there's an old story of Dwight L. Moody. Did anybody ever heard of him? He was an old, kind of the pre-Billy Graham revival preacher, and he was having mass revival meetings in Chicago and decided that one night he was going to talk about law and the sin, and the next night he was going to talk about grace and forgiveness. And so his first night was just powerful hellfire and damnation and sin and just bringing everybody just to the point where they would repent. And then the next night was grace and forgiveness. Well, the night of the first night was the Great Chicago Fire. I don't know if this is true. And he never got the second. So I hope we'll all be here next week. After I finish today, down here, aspirations. Here, limitations. Okay, over here, people, support, and over here, people, demands. Limitations, aspirations, people, support, and people, demands. Okay, now I'm just going to read, I kind of jotted down some notes last night that would kind of define these four areas, and like Tavia, just listen and think about as I read these, think about your human condition, your life, where you are now, where you've been, where you're going, and the questions you've asked about being human. Just kind of listen and see how you feel as I basically we'll go around the circle up here on our little model. First, I might have the wrong word here. I really meant aspirations or possibilities. It would be both. Two S's?
Three.
Three S's. No, two S's. I have no confidence in spelling if you say five S's. I'll believe you. Okay. The awe and wonder of being human. we think about the drive that all of us have to love and to intimacy. And the wonderful bodies that we have been given that experience pleasure. With these bodies, we can run, we can dance, we can love, and we can receive. How we have the mental drive to learn and to experience, to contemplate, and to find truth. We have eyes and ears and a nose and a mouth to take in the wonder and explore the wonder and beauty of the world. We've been given the gift of creativity. We've been gifts that we can find fulfillment within these gifts. Using our gifts, we move into vocations, and we work, and we find meaningful work. Then we are driven to forge a beautiful identity and to be proud of the people that we are. In an awesome way, we've been given a sense of duty to accomplish that which is right. And then all within this is all of the opportunities of the modern world of education, a free social system, democracy, the end of social restraints. In other words, this arrow, it's very purposely going up here, this arrow. And it's just all the drives that all of us have to fulfill ourselves. And all the wonderful gifts that we've been given to make this movement towards both fulfillment and towards love and towards intimacy. All the facilities to just take in and enjoy and grow and learn. Here is all the wonder of the upward thrust of being human and how we celebrate that, don't we, and give thanks for it. With these aspirations and these possibilities and all the tools, you might say, we have to reach, we have the help of wonderful people support. We have intimate relationships, people who really care about us and affirm us. Think about myself, I have other people that serve me, help me achieve, help me reach my potential. People that love me the most, that will forgive me when I fail, so I'm secure to make risks as I reach up with the gifts that I've been given. Others who lead me and provide me good examples. All of this wonderful people support as I reach to fulfill my ambitions and my possibilities. Right now we just say, wow, isn't life wonderful? And also, sometimes we wish, if it were only just that, right after we finish here, we have this just almost cosmic but. That doesn't sound right. Maybe it does, you know. Maybe it does. Well, this is really deteriorating. Part of the aspiration is just think of the ability to laugh. But I, somehow in this, just want you to kind of feel this, feel it in yourself. It's part of the reason you came to Holden. You have creativity, and there's truth you're searching for. There's beauty you want to express, and you've been given gifts that this can be fulfilled, and you come to Holden, and it's a beautiful place where there are people supporting you to reach certain fulfillments here. That's one reason why I think we're all here, that we're responding to this God-given aspiration for ourselves. I was going to mention God. It's awfully hard not to. Okay, now the limitations, just, for the almost, the harsh human dilemma comes that for almost every aspiration, there's something coming down here that's almost stopping everyone, or you could say is stopping everyone. We're born with limitations. We're born with defects. We're born with hereditary defects. We grow up with hang-ups and repressions. We grow up with certain types of neurosis that are crippling. We grow up with guilt, and the very duty down here that drives us to do right drives us backwards with a whole, all kinds of feelings of guilt. Pleasure so easily turns into pain. The very decisions we make limit us. The decisions to move towards parenthood and having family limit that decision, limits all kinds of other possibilities. You know, that dream to sail around the world. Instead, you have family and a mortgage. Decisions, and then just the economics. That you're stuck in a job, you're stuck doing this. There's inflation that you never catch up with. Inflation, so it's a life of work and work and work. And then when we almost think we have made it, then there's sickness, there's the accident. The person who loves beauty goes blind. The person who loves to hear the sounds of creation becomes deaf. And then there's arthritis, heart disease, cancer. Creativity becomes hampered by situation after situation. People around us, others who don't discover us. And all of the individual feelings of inadequacy that cripple us. The fear, and if, you know, a lot of these aspirations, I find I convince myself if I never try them, at least I won't fail. I don't try them, at least I won't fail. So we're crippled by all of these fears of failure. And then forces without us that we have no control over, you know, if it's wars or famine or the economy, how many times we are just kind of a storm blows over our life and changes everything. And then time marches on, and I can never stop time. And right now I'm in that middle age, getting into that middle-age crisis where you realize that half is over, you know, and I've only accomplished about 1%, 1%. And so you go into these crises of the passages of life, and time marching and the clock ticking away, the constant reminder is the biggest no, the biggest negation to any aspiration that I have is that as every minute goes by, that is a minute closer to the end and closer to death, which is a big no. That is really the negation of every potential and every possibility that I have. Okay, then, so all of a sudden, the more we live, the more we realize that every aspiration we have, there seems to be a... You know what I mean? just when you think you've almost made it, crash. You know, and so often life, all the crashes come all at the same time. And there we are. Okay, now if that isn't bad enough, then the problem with all of these wonderful, wonderful people who give us all this support is they also have their aspirations. Right? And if none of them had any aspirations, if only I had aspirations, you know, wouldn't it be a wonderful world? You know, if I could only just have all of you around helping me reach mine. I wish none of you had any aspirations. Robert Geiser at the seminary in Berkeley, Luther scholar, says, God's big mistake, according to Adam, was that God didn't make two gardens. Mm-hmm. Do you get it?
No.
You want to drag it last?
God's big mistake is that he didn't make two gardens.
Oh, because he missed it.
Let's see. No, you don't.
Yeah,
it's a riddle, I guess. Kind of.
I thought
you
didn't make two lives.
No, that would have helped too.
I
only made a garden for Adam and a garden for Eve, and he put two in one garden. Two people in one garden. In other words, he created society. What do these people do, that these wonderful people that support us? They have their own dreams, their own ambitions that come into conflict with mine. This produces tensions. They make demands on me. You know, think of parents and you know, the tremendous fulfillment you receive from children at the same time as all these demands and their problems and their hang-ups that are constantly pushing in on my life, you know, or marriage. You know, here's two people seeking to support each other in each of their aspirations, but each has to make demands on the other. And that act of relationship, in a way, is a crippling, in one aspect, is crippling to my aspirations. And so those around me not only give, but they demand to be served. Children need extra. They hamper my achievements and they box me in. And like the old saying, isn't it, God deliver me from my friends. And then the final, they can turn against me, let me down, disappoint me, as the pressure of their fulfillment comes in conflict with the pressure of my fulfillment. And then the final, I think the final crunch is the reality when you really, really think, is that no matter how intimate I become with another person, that we both always face each other with a wall and a final loneliness. A final loneliness. That intimacy is never complete. There's always that loneliness. And I know this in being a pastor, talking about with a widow, widows that are hurt because they stick at the deathbed of their husband for days, and then they leave the room for 10 minutes and he chooses to die. And the ultimate realization that he chose, as many would say most people choose, to do the most personal and the most intimate thing for ourselves that any of us will ever do, that is to die, that we choose to do that alone. It's almost like a way of saying that finally we are alone. Alone. Now, so what the feeling that we have from this model is that life is a crunch. You know, and there's something about life that I have all these wonderful aspirations moving me up, and almost an equal limitations. And the final big limitation, if none of the other limitations work, there's death that'll do me in if none of the others do me in. And then on the side, the wonderful people support that comes, and the opposite, how those very people put the demands on me that limit so many of my creative aspirations. And I think the deeper and deeper you feel this, the deeper and deeper we start feeling that to live the most sensitively as a human being is to realize that I live in a crunch. And when you really feel this, I haven't found a word that describes it. The closest thing would be arg. Does anybody else have a word that's spelled? This one I know how to spell. It's A-A-A-A-R-G, exclamation.
There's also FIDA.
FIDA, right.
More emphatic than UFDA.
Yeah, UFDA is, you know, minor, but this is a FIDA.
How do you spell that?
But 10 A's and an R and a G.
And peanuts is an H and
a
G.
Yeah.
I'd like to like to take 5 minutes and just turn to another person again now and take like 2 minutes apiece and just talk about this. You know, maybe one example from your life where you feel the crunch and where this really strikes a note of reality for you, if you want to share that, or else just share share with each other, is this real? And just turn to the person next to you, like kind of two by two by two. And I'll call you in 4 minutes. So we can do this better.
So, what do you think?
I'd like to take 5 minutes and just turn to another person again now and take like 2 minutes apiece and just talk about this. You know, maybe one example from your life where you feel the crunch and where this really strikes a note of reality for you, if you want to share that, or else just share share with each other, is this real? And just turn to the person next to you like kind of two by two by two. And I'll call you in 4 minutes. We can do this better.
So, what do you think?
Well, that was short, but I think we'll pull together. I hope our discussing here is just a start, and we can carry on this discussion. I think we have a good discussion going here. Oh, it's hard sometimes to quit, but it's just think of it as a 15-minute break, and we'll have weeks to. Because what we're really just starting here is really sharing our lives and our life reality with each other, and as community grows here, that's fine. I hope this is just a little start, and if you could just take a minute. Was there anything that you'd mentioned that you'd like to share with the whole group just for a couple minutes? Did most of you see this as a reality? Does this ring true?
Yes.
Yeah. How would you, or why would you say that? That's a bad question because the answer is simply because it does.
What we thought of was the cartoon in front of, I think, Harold and Maude or something, I can't remember what it was, but Bambi meets Godzilla.
Oh, yes.
This beauty, and Bambi's so gentle, just sitting there, all of a sudden, this from our bottle, but it's a funny thing, but it's real, it rings true, it was right there.
Or the, in the Gospel according to Peanuts, is Snoopy sitting under the icicle that's about ready to break.
I remember having a discussion one time with a fellow about possibilities and how people are afraid to try things. And I remember sometime down the line in this discussion, which kind of ranged around this general area, he said, people wait and don't try things, you know, and if they only go out and give them a try, they probably find out that they really can't do it.
Exactly. All right.
And I experienced the whole thing in one twist, and it's right there. So.
I mentioned this the other day, this the hang-ups, you know, is this man that saw a Cadillac limousine. I think I've already mentioned this one. He saw a Cadillac limousine go around the corner, looked in, this wealthy man sitting in the back with the chauffeur, and he said, "There, but for myself, go I."
We felt the same time. We were looking at it thinking that, like when you hear the story about gravity and the way a body is held up by all these forces pressing on you, and if you take away from it, fall down or whatever, I was thinking that we are all supported and caged in by these various things which lift us up and pull us sideways.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of some people who maybe get over the limitations in life, like some of the mystics.
Mm-hmm.
They just remove the limitations, some of them, and so that they're able to go on a plane different from our own.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of fits in with your little picture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a whole different world, you know. Are there humans that kind of rise above this? Or, you know. Well, I thought we'd close today with David, you want to make an assignment, and we also want to be through by 3:56. So I'm going to have a closing, again, 10-minute theological statement. Closing lecture, so, but I hope to tie this together a little now. Kind of just to mention a little the kind of natural human way to deal with this, and probably the most natural, and it would be fun to continue a conversation about this, is some form of denial. And I'd almost see two forms of this denial taking. One would be fight, and the other would be flight. Now, fight would be the tragic attempt to somehow beat the crunch. I will succeed. You know, I'm going to make it. I'm going to do it. And and especially in our age, is how can we use technology to beat it? And, I didn't know whether to laugh or weep at this ad in Newsweek. Did you all see it?
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can do it if we can get 200 years.
Yeah.
What is this?
Well, here's a two super bodies with 200-year-old faces.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, incredibly expensive technology could enable a few people, notice it's a few, to live for 200 years or more. Who will be chosen and who will choose? And then this champion paper company that wants to get across that they're really interested in mankind, have an essay about this. But to me, it's just it's part of the tragic attempt. You know, maybe we can buy some more time. And then the problem in this tragic attempt, people tend to be thingified. And Niebuhr brings this out for so beautifully. He sees this crunch, he calls it the human anxiety, to be caught between here and here. And the human condition is that we know, we have self-consciousness of where we are and self-consciousness of death. We know, and then so out of this anxiety flows the tragic attempt to still do it, and then build all the self-justifications and vindications. And the more you know you're going to lose it deep down, the more you try. You know, the more you try. So, and then people become thingified. In other words, just become part of the whole machine that you just, in a tragic way, move towards that goal. And the other is to flee. You know, and that's, we could talk about 100 ways of escaping from this. Everything from religion to any kind of ism to drugs. Most popular religion today is a kind that would deny this and just see, you know, the happiness religion. You know, as a tragic thing that to offer a religion that's going to give happiness. You might call it the final illusion or the final fleeing. So many ways to run or to fight. Okay, now what Christian theology now says to this whole human situation. Many different words have been used in our Lutheran tradition. We've used words like the left hand of God. This is the left hand of God, and tomorrow we'll get to the right hand of God. Lutheran theology has also used the term the hidden God, also the God of wrath, or God the enemy. And all of these words, left hand of God, hidden God, the wrath of God, God the enemy, all affirm this, and this is what I want you to think about until next time, that the reality behind the crunch is God. God is pushing here, God is pushing here, God is pushing here, and God is pushing here. God pushing all the way. Every direction. God driving the human person up against the wall. The very reality that gives me aspirations throws a roadblock so that these aspirations will never be realized, and then gives me the consciousness so that I'm aware of what's happening and therefore threatened, and I'm able to contemplate my weakness and my death. And this God keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. And God seems then to be the enemy of human existence. There's two ways we can go now. One is just to say, life is really a big joke. You know, there's some ultimate joke going on. Not a funny joke, but a sick joke going on. To put us into this situation. And the other is really the answer that Christian theology would have a struggle with, is the alternative to my looking at this situation and just reaching a point of despair. And that's what we'll deal with when we now ask the question, is there gospel or is there good news? And I really feel this deeply, that it would be awfully easy to just say that the gods are laughing, you know, like the gods are playing a big game up there and just laughing, just like sometimes, remember as kids, we played with ants or in a kind of a cruel way. Rudolf Bultmann, who's known mostly as a New Testament scholar, wrote an essay called The Crisis of Faith, and I want to just say the main points and then one quote from the essay and close with that. God gives us the care for tomorrow so that we work and work, but finally all is lost. And the mysterious power behind this is God. God gives us a longing for truth and beauty, and then provides time that no moment of beauty is ever kept. And the power behind this loss is God. And God gives us a desire for love, and then forces us into a final solitude. The power that drives us into final solitude is God. He gives us a desire to know and to do, and then sets a terminus on all our knowing and doing. And the power behind this terminus is God. And God gives us duty, but we never master what we ought, and so we are guilty. The power that shows us our guilt is God. It is God who makes people finite, who makes a comedy of our care, who allows our longing to miscarry, who casts us into solitude, who sets a terminus to our knowing and doing, who calls us to duty, and who gives the guilty over to torment. I'll close there, and next time we'll move from crunch to grace.